Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb,
and you're listening to Tax Tuesdays, bringing tax knowledge to the masses, you being the masses, and us hopefully bringing you a little bit of tax knowledge. If nothing else, you'll be entertained.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. So, starting off another Tax Tuesday, first off, welcome, welcome, welcome. If you haven't already, go onto YouTube and subscribe to our YouTube channel and click that little icon next to it. I don't even know what it's called. It notifies you when there's new videos posted. It doesn't email you or anything, but the next time you go onto YouTube, it'll say, hey, Anderson has new videos. Do you want to see them? Other thing is like us on Facebook and then interact with us, because we try to throw lots of cool stuff out there, give you lots of good deals. Send in questions at taxtuesday@andersonadvisors.com. If you need a detailed response, you do need to be a client. If you're going to be going into lots of specifics about yourself, you just want a general one, we'll probably answer it live. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give it back and help educate. So we have a ton of questions to go through. We'll just start off by listing the questions so you get an idea of what we're going to be covering today. Is it better to pay myself higher or lower wages from my C corporation in order to maximize tax benefits? I have a vacation rental I live in about 4 months per year and rent out the other 8 months. What is the best strategy? What is the best state to form an LLC in for charging order protections? So we'll go over all those. When you have different functions of a business under what entity or one entity, how do you write off the expenses if you have one EIN? What type of entity should I choose for my e-commerce business? Is it preferable for tax purposes to pull all of my 401k money at one time for real estate investing? I think they mean pulling it all out. Is it okay to keep rental payments in my personal bank account, or does it have to go into the property LLC's bank account? I am selling a house to my brother and doing a 1031 exchange with proceeds. I heard that the IRS may disallow this transaction. Is it true? And how can we get around it? Are charitable contributions deductible to a C Corp? We'll answer all those. I provide gas, food, and lodging for an unrelated person. Is any of that deductible on my personal return? What are the advantages of switching from an S Corp to a multi-member LLC partnership? Here's kind of a long one, which I thought was interesting. I wanted to go over this with you guys because it's a very interesting answer. My partner and I own a lodging business that has broken even over the last few years. There are 7 cabins, none of which have ever been depreciated. Next year, the mortgage will be paid off and our K-1s will begin to show income. Will we still be able to take depreciation? I have an HSA, health savings account, with my W-2 job where I contribute the max annually. My wife and I have a separate C-Corp. Can I create another HSA through our C-Corp and contribute to the two? And then the last one, can I qualify as a real estate professional even though I have an unrelated W-2 job if I can prove I work 750 hours in my real estate business? So we're going to answer all of these in order. We already have a bunch of questions. So let's take a look at some of these. Advantages and disadvantage of a lease purchase of a vehicle through my C Corp. So first off, you're either doing a lease kind of or a purchase. If you're doing a lease where you're buying out the vehicle at less than 10% of its fair market value, it's going to be treated as a purchase, or you have the right to treat it as a purchase. So here's where you have advantages and disadvantages. First off, if you take depreciation and you rapidly depreciate a vehicle, so a lot of people want to right off the car in year one, you're going to have restrictions depending on the type of vehicle. But here's the rub. If you use that thing less than 50% for a business, you're not going to get to use that anyway. If you are using it 100% for business, then I would recommend you actually possibly have the vehicle in the business, depending on what type of business it is. Otherwise, I would just keep it where you're just reimbursing yourself mileage, guys. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to put yourself in a situation where you could have something called depreciation recapture. You fall below that 50% threshold and you have to track every year. So for example, vehicles are what, five-year property. So if you take that vehicle and you take a big chunk of it right off in year one, you're doing bonus depreciation, you're taking it's a pretty good sized chunk of change, let's say close to 20 grand. And then you fall beneath that 20 period or that 50% period threshold, you're going to have to recognize all that as ordinary income. It's not a good situation. It's better to just reimburse mileage, and we use Mile IQ. All right. So that was a freebie. Now let's get to the questions that were posed. Is it better to pay myself higher or lower wages for my C corporation in order to maximize tax benefits? Jeff, I know you're going to have some thoughts on this.
We're going to say what we usually say. It depends. And the reason it depends is if you're talking about benefits such as retirement plans where you want to be able to contribute more, especially if you're in a defined benefit plan in your corporation, you're going to want to pay yourself more.
Yeah. So what Jeff's saying is, hey, if you pay yourself active wages, you could put them into a retirement plan. They qualify. If you can't do that with dividends, you can't do that with reimbursements and things like that. It has to actually be your wages.
But on the other hand, if you're raising your wages, but you're just increasing the loss in your corporation, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you're paying more tax personally and the corporation's not getting a current year benefit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we run into other areas where some people want to be able to show W-2 income for loan purposes or other such things.
You're hitting on a lot of them. So from a tax standpoint, it's an easy calculation. You say, hey, do I need the money? If I need it personally, then is it better for me to pay it out as a wage to myself, or am I better off treating it as a dividend or, you know, the profits where it's going to be taxed at the corporate level and then at my level? It's almost never better to have it taxed as a dividend. And it quite often is much better to have it stay in the corporation if you're in your accumulation phase. So my wages are high. Let's say I'm already in the top bracket. So I'm sitting at, what is it this year? 37% for federal plus my state. So in some states, you guys are at a 50% tax bracket versus letting it sit there at 21% in the corp. You just saved yourself 30 cents on the dollar just for leaving it there. You just have to have a justification for accumulating the capital if you're going to do it year after year.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, there's no requirement to pay a salary out of your C corporation.
Yep. A lot of folks don't realize that. You don't have to pay yourself a salary. There's no technical requirement. There's always weird ones like that. And by the way, your compensation includes wages and fringe benefits. So if you're just giving yourself benefits, there's nothing wrong with that either, even if they're non-taxable benefits. So it's reimbursing all your medical expenses. It's reimbursing business expenses that are unreimbursed, really, but that still benefit the business. It's doing a home office. It's doing 280A. It's doing a bunch of these things. It doesn't have to pay you a wage to do that. Those are technically considered compensation. It just happens to be non-taxable. If the company gave you a car and like handed you a Lamborghini, that would be taxable. They actually have to do withholding on it. That's a taxable fringe benefit. So, you know, you always look at those things and evaluate it. Where I look at the big benefit when you're looking at wages is, A, wages always have to be reasonable. So you can't just go willy-nilly and say, oh, this year I'm going to give myself $1 million, this next year zero. You got to be a little more deliberate than that. And you got to be, you know, careful. But you really want to do a calculation saying, here's the trajectory I'm on. I'm in a very high earning stage of my life. Maybe I'm better off accumulating more in the corporation with the idea that it might pay me out those dividends in future years when I need them. I'm still working for the corp. It's not a deduction to the corp, but I'm able to get the money out of the corp at my long-term capital gains rate when I'm at a much lower tax bracket. And for those of you who are not aware, your tax bracket fluctuates, or your long-term capital gains fluctuates depending on how much money you make. So, for example, a married filing jointly couple might be, I think it's less than $78,000. It's at zero. So, you know, hey, I'm in my retirement years, or I have a bunch of losses that I took out of my real estate. Maybe I'm going to pay myself out some profits. It's not a bad idea. I'm not going to pay tax on it. So let's go through these next ones. Fun one. I have a vacation rental I live in about 4 months per year and rent out the other 8 months. What is the best tax strategy? Well, Jeff, you probably have some opinions on this one.
I don't know about a tax strategy, but there are rules for handling rentals with personal use. And what the rules primarily say is you can't deduct per certain expenses for the personal use.
Right.
So like your...
You can't depreciate the house against your personal use.
Right. So your real estate taxes and your mortgage interest is still going to be fully deductible either on your rental property or personally. Mm-hmm. But other things like your HOA fees and your repairs and your landscapes may only be partially deductible.
Mm-hmm. See, I think here you're going to be getting the old two-thirds of your depreciation, two-thirds of your expenses would be treated as investment. You almost treat this like you have a threeplex and you live in one of them.
Yeah.
So you're breaking this into little pieces. Now, that said, unless you're in a state where we would lose a benefit, I would more than likely be putting this rental into an LLC from a asset protection standpoint and from a estate planning standpoint, assuming that this may even be a different state than where you reside the majority of the time, where you could be looking at probating in two different states. The only states where I'd have an issue is possibly like a Texas or a Florida, where we don't want to mess up the homestead if this is considered a personal residence. I don't necessarily think it is, because you're in it 4 months, and I imagine that you're staying 8 months in some other location. That's probably going to be your primary residence.
So, I mean, this almost sounds like he's staying in an off-season. Maybe these are all short-term rentals during that 8 months.
It could be. Or maybe during the summer he's going someplace. I know people that do that. They go up, they'll spend the summer months in a place that's not so hot, and the other 8 months of the year, they're wherever they work, and maybe they're a teacher, maybe they're a professor, something like that. So I've seen that a number of times. So anyway, so you just know that if you're renting it, it's not going to be as straightforward as we'd like. It's not one or the other. It's both, and it's proportionate. What is the best state to form an LLC in for charging order protection? That's a good question. The two that we recommend is, and it's not in any particular order, it's Wyoming or Nevada. You know, Wyoming got into the habit of not putting out officers and directors on their Secretary of State site, so it's not listed. In Nevada, you can list a nominee. They're pretty much identical statutes. The biggest difference is Nevada has a business court that you can apply to, pay a little higher fee, and you get judges that are used to commercial complex litigation. So if you're an operating business, maybe that's where you want to be. But for the most part, I'm a dollars and cents guy, and it's pretty cheap to do Wyoming right now. But the statutes are identical, so it really comes down to are there any nuances? But I think they're both great. Somebody asked on that last question, by the way, on the LLC. I'm going to go back to it just so you guys, I don't confuse you guys. So that one, somebody said, what if you pay rent? Well, if you can't really pay yourself rent.
Right. You cannot rent to yourself.
Yeah. You are the same taxpayer. Unless you put that into an S corp and rented it, then you could. But then you lose all the, I don't think I'd be doing that.
Now you're paying rent. And it's primarily for that reason that they don't want you deducting personal expenses.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Somebody says something about a spendthrift trust, IRS rule to zero out your taxes. Oh, no. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And yeah, no. There's some fun stuff out there. That's, you know, the 643B common law trust. I always see this. About once a year, I have this stuff pop up. I would just advise you not. IRS has already ruled on most of this, if it's what I'm thinking of. I understand a spendthrift trust. We have a great statute here that we like to use for asset protection trusts if warranted. You know, it's a bazooka to a gunfight. And then Gary says, what about New Mexico LLCs? They're pretty strong, and Alaska's aren't bad either, but I like sole remedy states. So what's the best state? I'm just going to tell you. I'm going to use Wyoming probably 9 times out of 10, Nevada the other one, and everything else is a distant second to third or fourth, you know, it's way down there. And that's just from doing this for a long time. All right. When you have different functions of a business under one entity, how do you write off the expenses if you have one EIN?
Well, I mean, a good example of this is some of their Fortune 500 companies. They're filing one tax return. Procter & Gamble, General Electric's a good example. They have a propulsion systems and they have power systems and appliance. But all of those expenses are flowing up into one tax return. Now, the difference comes when it's different types of income. And by different types, I mean rental income versus ordinary income versus portfolio income, like interest and dividends and capital gains. Then you have to break out the expenses to match the income
type that it's going to. And let's just say, hey, I have one business and I have multiple DBAs or something, and mm-hmm. you know, how do you write off the expenses? You treat it just as one business. It's one return, and you're writing off all the expenses mm-hmm. as one taxpayer. So there's no difference. What Jeff's saying is that if you have different types of income being generated inside that same business that might be considered portfolio income, you might have limitations on those as to what the expenses are.
Right.
So, you know, you treat it almost from an accounting standpoint. I'm probably going to break your divisions into taxes. I'm going to break off each division into a class, but you're going to break it into different classes and underneath the same P&L. So a lot of folks don't realize that that's what we do. For example, with real estate, I don't want to have a whole bunch of different accounts that I have to open up for each property in my QuickBooks, unless you really enjoy closing down a set of QuickBooks and opening them up, which how long does that take nowadays? I mean, it's getting faster, but it used to be like several minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't take a long time. Well, I saw somebody trying to open a set of QuickBooks this morning and waiting mm-hmm. and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, so it's like, hey, I don't want to have to come in and out. I'm just going to use one set, one main tax return. So it's that's really what it boils down to. So if you have different functions, you can label them as different classes underneath the same set of books.
And in that regards, if you have different classes or different LLCs or locations, divisions, whatever you want to call it, you want to try to apply those expenses to the income that's being generated. But sometimes you have those overhead type expenses that you may want to allocate across everything. Mm-hmm. You may only have one bank account and five mm-hmm. rental properties. And so there are various ways of handling that, mm-hmm. but it's all going to end up in the same place.
Yep. So a bunch of questions, and it seems like we're getting them from the previous question we had. Oh boy. Somebody says it's not a necessity to have multiple LLCs for liability purposes. It depends on what you're protecting. Like if I have a bunch of cash and I have stocks, bonds, I'm using one LLC.
Right.
If I have multiple pieces of real estate that cause liability to each other, there's a good chance I'm breaking those into separate LLCs. Any rules against renting a home from an LLC I have an interest in? No. If it's a partnership and you may have a piece of it, then you're renting it from the partnership. It's just when you own it completely, there's just no reason for you to do it. You can't really rent from yourself. You're the same individual, especially if it's personal property.
One of the things I've thought about, though, as far as we often hear how many entity or how many properties can we put in an LLC or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I often think about is how much can you afford to lose in one gulp?
Yep.
You need to determine your risk level mm-hmm. when you're making this decision.
That's it. Do I want to lose at 20%, 30%? Am I willing to lose half of my assets in one shot? And granted, it's not going, like it's chances are it's not going to happen. It's like a very small percentage, but it happens enough to where you have to be aware of it. It's going to happen eventually that you're going to have to deal with a lawsuit. The bigger question is, do you want it to be one that could take out everything? And so you just say, here's how much I'm willing to lose. Somebody says, what are the tax advantages of having rental properties in LLCs versus sole proprietor, aka 1040? Rental properties go on your Schedule E, not on a Schedule C sole proprietorship. There is no difference depending on how you set it up. But if you have rental properties, the whole idea is that we want them to flow onto your personal return onto your Schedule E, where rental properties go. The question is, should I have them in LLCs? Yeah, from a liability standpoint, LLCs are awesome. From a tax standpoint, we could ignore them. So are there any tax advantages? No. We want all the advantages to flow to us. So you wouldn't use LLCs for a tax reason unless, here's a big unless you have a tax appetite where you have a management company like a C-Corp where you're pulling money off of your tax return legitimately by putting it onto a separate taxpayer, being your C-Corp. If you have a common expense for multiple properties, one tax ID, do you prorate the expenses across the properties? So we have that same question. Would you prorate them, Jeff?
Yeah,
internally you would, but on a tax return, probably not, right?
Yeah, on a tax return, we do it both ways. Sometimes we prorate them across rental properties, if we're talking rental properties. If we're talking about operational type income, we're probably not doing that. There's no reason to break it out separately. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's perfectly acceptable to prorate them,
mm-hmm.
prorate those overhead type costs.
Somebody says, do you file multiple DBAs with the state the LLC is in? Well, And so it depends on where you're located,
right,
and it depends on where you're conducting business. So your DBAs are either going to be city level, county level, or state level, depending on where you're at.
And I think mostly in California, they're county level.
County and
I think some city.
Like Texas is state, Nevada, we would be looking at county. It always depends on where you're doing business. And all you're doing is saying basically, hey, I'm operating in, under, you know, Jeff Webb Accountants. You do not put an Inc. after it. You do not put an LLC after it. And it is a DBA of something else. By not putting the designation after it, you're telling them to go look it up to figure out who it is that's actually they're operating under. So it could be ABC, Inc., DBA, Jeff Webb Accounting.
And it's pretty cheap to do. I mean, mm-hmm. most of I've seen is like $25 a year. And it really protects you from having other people use your DBA mm-hmm. name.
Yep. And you're basically putting the world on notice that it's not you as a person. So the default is if there's no entity, they're going to look at you personally. I'm in Salt Lake City running a dealership. We should file our LLC in Wyoming? Question mark. Probably not. So what we're probably doing under that situation, because you have an active business car dealership in Utah, is I would more than likely have that be an entity like a LLC tax as a corporation or a traditional corporation, either an S or a C, depending on the ownership and what you need. And what we may end up doing is having the interest in that held by an LLC out of the state. And the reason being is there are two types of liability, inside liability and outside liability. The inside liability of a business is, let's pretend that we have a business and an employee sues you for something, and they're trying to, they can take what the business has. They don't come after you personally unless you personally did something goofy, but they're limited to the inside. In the rental world, if you have a tenant issue, it stays inside that particular entity. Then the opposite is, let's say that I give my keys, I'll give you guys a real life case. A doctor, they found out this the hard way. They let somebody, they had people over at the house. One of the individuals at the house, they said, hey, can I borrow your car, run to the store? They loaned the car. The individual had a massive accident and caused grievous bodily harm. And of course, who'd they sue? The person who entrusted that individual with the vehicle, meeting the doctor. So that's outside liability. Now they're coming after your stuff. And so the reason we use Wyoming and Nevada is because they can't take away that stuff. So I have, you know, so that's the thing. Somebody's asking, one of Anderson's YouTube videos says the IRS, what is it, specifically started looking more at real estate investors with multiple properties on their Schedule E for audits. If you have a main partnership plan to have multiple LLCs, parent LLC taxed as a, okay. So Chris, what you're referring to is that when you have lots and lots of properties, rental properties, I think you get three properties per Schedule E. So you're going to have pages of your Schedule E. The more complex your return, the more chances are that you might be enjoying an audit. Same thing with the more money you make on your personal return, the greater chance you're going to be audited. So what some people do is they set up a holding entity that is a partnership. That's all. You set up an LLC text as a partnership, either between spouses or you have a, like a corporation might have a 1% interest. And all you're trying to do is get a 1065, a partnership return to list all the properties, and they just hand you a K-1, and that goes on page 2 of your Schedule E, and voila, you have one line item. So some people, well, proponents of that, there's quite often will recommend that. And then sometimes, depending on how complex you are, you're saying, no, I wouldn't want to do that. You know, you don't need an extra return. It always depends. So I think that I would probably side on the, if you have more than a few properties and I'm going to have multiple pages, I'm probably going to go the 1065 route. Probably going to have the LLC holding company file its own tax return just because it makes my return look a lot cleaner. And that's probably because I'm going to be showing it to lenders and things like that. I may want to get a loan and I don't want to have a whole bunch of stuff.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
will the rental property holding company, LLC, need to file a 1065 and will I get a K-1? The answer, Ron, is yes, if you have one, if you have more than one owner of that LLC. So again, if it's husband and wife, we could do it, or we add somebody else. Fun stuff.
And I kind of like, in that case, having a corporation with a 1%, making them the member manager.
Yep, I do too.
Gives you a little more liability protection on top.
And I like having a C-Corp or a corporation that I can split income with. Here's the thing. I'm going to put this as a complete aside. I'm going to go back to this one. All right. So if you are doing an LLC and if you are doing real estate, which sounds like a lot of you guys do, because I'm seeing the questions come in, they all seem to be real estate related, with the exception of our car dealership. You can take a pretty massive tax deduction at any given time on that property, depending on when you purchased it. So you could always take it, and you know, we just went through another course today on cost segregation. Love having those types of guys come in. We've talked about it a number of times on this Town Tax Tuesdays, but you don't have to take your property depreciation over 39 years or 27 and a half years if it's residential investment property. 39 is for commercial. You can accelerate and take a big chunk of those expenses, and it's as high right now as about 30%, as a via cost segregation this year. So it really comes down to what your need is. But I always look at it and say, hey, I want to make sure that I'm capturing all those expenses. I'm always going to want to have that option. And I don't want to stand in the way of doing that. On the same token, so I have this big massive loss, I may still have expenses and other things that I still want to be able to get to. And so maybe I'm offsetting a lot of rents, but there's still tax-free money that I can upstream into a corporation and still get to myself. You cannot do that if you are just a partnership. You cannot do that if you are just a sole proprietorship. Technically, you cannot be an employee of your own partnership or sole proprietorship. So if we want a bunch of the fringe benefits, if we want the tax benefits of an accountable plan, then we need to have a corporation floating out there. And when you pull that money off, it's off your personal tax return, even if it's compounding and making a bigger loss. We don't care. And if you have losses, somebody asked this question a little earlier, if you have losses in a corporation, you just carry them forward. If it's a C corp, if it's an S corp, it's going to pass down to the shareholders. So anyway, so that kind of brings us to this next question, because this does have a lot to do when somebody says, hey, what type of entity should I choose for my e-commerce business? I'm going to tell you two things. First off, the entity, from a liability standpoint, I'm just going to care that you have an entity, an LLC or a corporation. Doesn't matter which to me, because the inside liability is going to, that's what I care about. I don't want your e-commerce business to spill over and cause you to get garnished the rest of your life because you had a business debt you couldn't pay and they just keep following you around personally because you're personally responsible. So I'm going to put an entity around that just to keep the inside liability at bay. Then we look at the taxes. And if you have an e-commerce business, chances are you can choose what jurisdiction you're going to be in. You could just say, hey, I could pick a very, you know, favorable jurisdiction to operate my business. Now I'm looking at the questions of whether I need the money to live off of, whether I'm already independently wealthy, whether I have a tax appetite, have a bunch of expenses that I'm not getting to write off. Maybe this business could be the one that does it. And so I'm going to be factoring it in. But as far as entity-wise, it's going to be an LLC or corp. As far as a taxable entity, I'm going to probably push you towards a starting point. Most people would say an S corp for an active business, or a C corp, depending on whether you have other income coming in that you want to separate out and have a tax appetite. So I'm going to be looking at either of those two. And it really comes down to, are you making money? Are you creating losses? Do you want those losses? Do you want to just carry those losses forward? All that stuff comes into play when you're choosing an entity. So I'm sorry to give you a little bit of a general answer. And then somebody asks online, says, I want to create a consulting business with four other friends. What is the best entity to form? So when you say consulting, that's a magic word for us. That's a specified service business under 199A. Used to be bad tax treatment if you were a C corp. So what it really comes down to is, I'll tell you what I would probably do. Your business entity, I'm probably making that a LLC tax as a partnership, or depending on how much money you guys are make, I might even make it a limited partnership with a corporate general partner. If you guys are a partnership, and then you guys could each choose what entity you own your partnership interest through. So for example, if I have four consultants, all of you guys making pretty good money, all of you guys wanting to take salaries, all of you guys wanting to have your own retirement plan, and you don't have a bunch of other employees, I'm probably setting you guys all up as S-Corps and a partnership that you're operating your business through. And then the money just flows through to you, and you could choose how much salary you want to pay yourself. You don't have to do the same thing your buddy's doing or your other partners are doing. You can reimburse yourself to your heart's content without affecting other people. And you could do your own 401k.
So let me ask. So four buddies get together and form an entity for consulting.
Mm-hmm.
Other side of the coin, which of these entities are the easiest for to either break up or let people leave? Sometimes these entities don't always work out.
Mm-hmm. They're all about the same, realistically.
Okay.
So what I would do is in your operating agreement have a rule. You don't want someone to be able to sell their interest to somebody without asking you. You might want to have the ability to...
Like a first refusal?
Yeah. I don't want them just to go off and hit me that way. So, you know, and stiff me, and I may want to say, hey, even if you do sell it, they can't become a member without my approval. They might be an assignee interest holder. They might be treated as a creditor of the organization. That's about it.
Does any of these entities offer more protection from inside liability, that is a partner or somebody making a bad decision?
As long as you have the entity around the business, it's not going to make that much of a difference. Okay. The only issue you have that, like, for example, in Nevada, you have LLCs, but they have corporations. Corporations have charging order protections here, but they're also susceptible to alter ego, where you're saying, hey, you and the business are one and the same. So what would I do if in doubt? I'm probably, if I'm not looking at the loss, I'm not looking at a 1244 stock election, which you know what that is, I'm probably doing an LLC. And yeah, it's like a balancing test. I wish it was an easy answer, but everybody's scenario is a little different. Right. And
I agree.
Yeah, somebody says, can I 199A as a trader? The answer is it depends. I think you can 199A, which is the qualified business income. It doesn't work on capital gains and things.
Trader and securities?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they would have to qualify as a mark-to-market election as a trader.
Otherwise, most of the income is not going to be eligible for the 199A.
I can tell you, unless you become a trader and make the mark-to-market, I don't believe you get the 199A. And even if you do, I'm not certain that the answer is 100% that you can. I don't know, sitting here. I'd like to donate one of my cars to my foundation. What is the process? You would, depending on how much value it is, if it's less than 500, you just retitle it into your foundation. If it's more than 500, you got to get an appraisal, right?
The alternative is the charity has to sell the vehicle.
Oh.
And then your deduction is whatever they sold it for.
Do they always have to sell it?
No, they can retain it.
Yeah.
A lot of these, they're buying them and sell them at an auction.
Mm-hmm. So somebody asked that.
Charities.
Let's see. I'm new to real estate business under and have a C corporation. I don't know how. I am new to the real estate business under the C corporation. I personally financed my trainings, travel, etc., and I have not had any returns on my investment. What should we be doing now to protect my business, get a return on my tax? Blah 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 blah. If you have a brand new business and you are doing a corporation, then Janelle, it sounds to me like you're probably doing training. You may not have been in the business of real estate yet, which means you're just going to grab those expenses on that first year return and carry them forward indefinitely. It is possible to take them personally if you dissolve that corporation at some point, as long as it's an actual corporation and not an LLC taxed as a corporation. And so long as you made a 1244 stock election, which you could do anytime prior to dissolving.
It was a corp.
If it was a corp. Yep. So like you're going to capture those deductions, and chances are you would not get them if you were not in that business already. So that's always the rub. And that's why when you see people doing real estate training, our motto is always going to be to put you into a C corp if you're not already in that business. Is it preferable for tax purposes to pull all of my 401k money at one time for real estate investing? So the answer is going to be a resounding, it depends. And it depends on a lot of different factors.
I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, well, it kind of sucks. If you have a ton of losses and you're over 55, you can make a 72T, right? Where are we going to be able to avoid the 10% penalty?
59.5.
So let's just say you have big loss, 59.5, lots of 401k money, no tax for taking it out. That's okay. You're 40, you're making lots of money. Now you have a 10% penalty and it's all taxable to you. Probably not. So if you really want to, you could always do real estate investing in your 401k and then you choose to take pieces out whenever you feel like
it. I think the only time that it would be necessary, it's not even necessary at that point, but I was thinking if you did, we're doing a Roth setup, the rollover business startup, you might want to jerk your whole 401k out and put it in your new 401k for the Roths. But otherwise, I think I'd probably just pull what I need it.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, I understand the liability issues on the LLC, but not the tax advantage of the LLC versus the 1040. Okay, so Gary, here's the deal on the LLC. LLCs do not exist for tax purposes. So if we are comparing an LLC versus a 1040, you're actually comparing a 1040 versus a 1040 in many circumstances. In other words, the LLC, if it's just you, is going to go on your Schedule C. So there's no difference. There's no tax benefit. It just gives you liability protection. If I want a tax benefit, I am going to treat that LLC as an S corp or a C corp. And I can just give you the numbers. Like you guys can proof me if you want, but go look at the 2018 data book by the IRS. If I'm making $100,000 as a sole proprietor versus an S corp, I am 1,200% more likely to be audited as the sole proprietor. And when I get audited as a sole proprietor, I am 93 to 95% guaranteed to lose. If I am audited as an S corp, it's a fraction of the time. It's literally 0.02. And I'm going to lose about 2/3 of the time when they audit you, but it's just so much less. Now, here's the rub. On $100,000, the average savings of being an S corp is going to be right around $10,000 per year. So if I'm just comparing one thing to the other, and I do these during TaxWise, I think I do three almost every time where I just break them down and compare to two businesses side by side, one's Schedule C and the other one's an S corp. I have never had it where that S corp did not substantially exceed the amount of take-home pay that you get to keep in your pocket. Just because S-corps, when you take the profit off, it is not subject to self-employment tax. It is not subject to old age, death, and survivors or Medicare. It's going to mathematically save you 14 cents on the dollar that you take out as profit. Now, if you're breaking even to zero, who cares? Be either one. But, you know, again, that's probably the only time I'm going to say that.
Yeah, the only time I can think of where being an LLC is going to make a difference for tax purposes mm-hmm. is if that is an LLC filing as a corporation, it cannot make a 1244 election.
Mm-hmm.
It can't take that 1244 loss because it doesn't own stock.
But if it's a sole proprietor, you're going to take that loss.
Yeah, for all the others, yeah.
Yeah. No, I know. And, you know, here's the other thing. You don't get to do an accountable plan if you're a sole proprietor or a partnership. So we don't like those just by themselves because we lose some serious benefit. So I think we belabored that one. We got a lot of questions. Actually, Colton, you asked a really good question. So I'm going to go, where did Colton's question go? We're going too many questions, too fast. There we go. If you have a high income W-2 job and started an LLC real estate business, we should have one rental. What is the best structure to be able to reduce taxes? So first off, I have a bunch of income. Now I have rental property. I'm going to tell you what my answer is. It's going to be to qualify yourself or your spouse as a real estate professional and rapidly depreciate that thing so I can offset some of my high income. At a minimum, what I want to do is make sure that I'm depreciating my asset enough to where I don't have any more income. So even if I can't take a loss, because you or your spouse does not qualify as a real estate professional, I just want to make sure that I don't have a single more dollar in my highest bracket from that rental business. And so I can tell you what I'd be doing is at a minimum, and I could say you said you have an LLC formed as a partnership. That's fine. It's going to flow on to you. Perfect. I already know what I'm doing. I'm probably taking that property and I'm going to make sure that I'm depreciating enough to where I'm not adding any taxable income. And if you don't know what a cost segregation is, it's a real easy way to think of it is, say you bought a house and all it had was carpet in it, no light fixtures or anything. You'd be able to break off what's the value of that carpet pretty easy. Well, the carpet's what, 5-year property. So you would write that off over 5 years. And with bonus depreciation, we could write it all off this year. So I get to write that thing off. I don't have to take it over 27 and a half years. So if I have a rental property, I may want to be able to write all that off. Even if I did just like, hey, I bought it. I want to write it off. If it's worth 20 grand, that's a $20,000 deduction. Okay, perfect. I love it when people say, I'm always confused. When I start an LLC or corporation, is the seed money considered capital stock? So in a corporation, not necessarily. So the answer is, depending on how that LLC is taxed or that S, then the answer is it's either paid in capital or it's a shareholder loan. So the reason you're confused is because there's plenty of options. It's up to you as to how you want to treat it. So it's not always considered anything.
Yeah, it's not a cut and dry answer. You get to help determine what it actually is.
Mm-hmm. Well, somebody else asked a really good question. They said, what's the best way to use a HELOC to fund my business? Well, if you use a HELOC, you can't write it off on your personal taxes. So I'd be looking at your standard deduction, and I'd probably be calling that a business loan, and I'd be writing off the interest through my business, let it reimburse you. See, now we're putting it on a Schedule E, right?
Yeah, and sometimes we see that where we're taking one property and we're buying another property with equity in the first property.
Somebody says, I thought as a real estate investor, you don't want to be classified as a professional since it'll hurt for future deals. A real estate professional for tax purposes does not harm you in any way. You're thinking of being a
trader,
an actual agent. No, this is real estate.
Oh, okay.
Right. So yeah. So Regina, no. This is from a tax standpoint. It will not hurt you in the slightest. It only helps you. What it is it's the exception to the passive loss rule for real estate losses. So when you qualify as a real estate professional, those passive losses can offset your active ordinary income. All right. Hey, you've been staring at this slide and not even look at it. Two for Tuesday. This is what we did last time. We're going to keep this going because it was successful. So when we're successful at something, we keep doing it. All right. So I've done two TaxWise workshops this year. Those are 2-day. We go over about 30 different tax strategies. They're 2 days in our Las Vegas office. What this is you get the live stream and the recording for this year. You're going to get the two classes we've already done. And you're going to get access to the live stream for the upcoming TaxWise coming up. I believe it's in November. It's the year-end TaxWise workshop. So we're going to be going over all the strategies you can use to save a few dollars. And then we're also going to give you what's just crazy, the Make Your Investments Bulletproof. We call it the Bulletproof Investor. And it's going to be 2 tickets to a 3-day tax and asset protection workshop class. You can come to Vegas, or we have them around the country. We're doing Chicago upcoming. We just did Dallas and San Francisco and Houston. And we're always popping around. And you also get Clint's real estate asset protection book and a 3-part video series from Clint, Michael Bowman, and myself on making your investments tax-wise and bulletproof and making sure you're passing on and creating a legacy. And then as the icing on the cake, you'd get a strategy session to make sure you have a wealth planning blueprint. You get all of these things all together for $197. So it's a screaming deal.
Every time the slide comes up, maybe it's the accountant in me, but I just shake my head. It's like, we're giving stuff away.
It is giving stuff away, but that's what we want to do. We give. So the whole idea is that I just got my book in the mail, so let me know how it goes. All we're doing is we're doing blueprints just to give you guys an idea of what a structure would look like and what the results would possibly look like. So I always look at things.
I would buy it.
Well, I'll take your credit card.
You already got my dollar.
All right. Hey, yes. Some of you guys may remember. I think you owe me another dollar. But I don't know. All right. Is it?
What you're talking about here.
All right.
Go ahead.
Is it okay to keep rental payments in my personal bank account, or does it have to go into the property LLC's bank account? So this is a very good question, because the answer is, if you want the courts to respect your LLCs, you need to respect your LLCs. So it doesn't implode it. So let's just say that I have an LLC that is my holding LLC, and it holds 3 other LLCs that have rental properties in them. So I have 3 rentals, and they pay a property manager. And to that property manager, I say, hey, skip the LLCs, just send it to me personally. That will not implode your deal. Contrary to what anybody else will say out there, that is a factor that they look at. If you skip it and you skip other stuff, you may have an issue. If you put it in the LLC and then just transfer it to yourself, that one little step removes that arrow. I used to have a professor that always said you shoot arrows at things until you have enough of them to where it takes it down. You used to always call it a train, try to derail the train. Well, that's just one of the little arrows that could hit you. So somebody else says, my rental is in an LLC. Should I manage the properties through my corp bank account in the corp name? Yeah, that's fair. That's fine, too, as long as it's not going to you personally. There's some really good questions that are coming in, guys. I don't mean to be distracted. Usually I just go through the questions, but as I'm watching these questions come in, there's actually some really good ones. Can index universal life insurance or mutual whole life be funded with my IRA or 401k without tax penalties? So, Deirdre, the answer is yes, it can now, but there's a tax ramification to having a bunch of cash value in your retirement plan because it has to get out someday. So, but yeah, you actually can. It's something that you would talk with somebody who's going to get a calculator out and tell you the good, bad, and the ugly. Would be a disreo. Somebody says, hey, would be better since notary fees are not subject to SE tax. That's weird. I didn't know that notary fees weren't subject to SE tax. Did you know that? Yeah, I don't know about that, Josh. I'd have to look at that. But I kind of think that maybe your personal fees would be. Hello from Florida. What is the best way to use a somebody already asked that. I rehabbed a property, but my contractor has not given me a breakdown of the stuff at cost segregation. Oh, so what you do is since they did it, you get them to give it. Otherwise, you just do a cost segregation study. And that's somebody who goes into your house. And I can just tell you, depending on the value of the house, so Christian, how much is that house worth, if you don't mind giving me the number? So let's see if how quickly, let's see, about $180,000. So you're probably talking about a $36,000, somewhere between a $30,000 and a $36,000 deduction. I would get a cost seg. It's probably on a $180,000 house. It's going to be $1,500 or less. So I can send you some good folks if you want. It'd have to be a certain amount. For cost seg, does the asset have to be a certain amount? Well, no, it really depends. So Rory's just asking, hey, why would you do a cost seg? Does it have to be a certain amount? No, you can actually, it used to be you couldn't do them on residential property. Now they're doing it below 100,000. Like sometimes it works out. If I have a bunch of income and it's going to hit me in the 50% tax bracket because I'm in California or something, I'm doing a cost seg. I'm getting a pretty good return on my money, but I want to have about a 7 to 10 fold return on the dollar. So if I spend $1,000 on something, I better get about a $7,000 to $10,000 tax benefit. That's the way I look at it.
Well, I was going to say the lower,
and not a deduction. I want a tax benefit.
The cost is on that asset you're doing the cost seg on. I think your percentage of what you need, the percentage of short term property is going to have to go up.
Yeah. So like Christian, this is really interesting because you just put this property into service. You're doing the rehab now and everything else. They could break it off pretty easy. But on about $180,000, I'm looking at that thing at $36,000 deduction. Well, if you're in the highest tax bracket, if you're a high income earner, let's just say it's 30%. That to me is about a $9,000 win. So it's kind of a no brainer. I'm probably doing it. Let's see. Somebody says, does the $197 fee apply to Platinum? Yes, Bob, because but some of this stuff's already included in your Platinum. So I would talk to somebody here. You've already gotten if you're already a Platinum, you already get the blueprint and stuff. Anyway, I'm reading too many questions at the one. For the cost seg, does it have to be a certain amount? Is the HVAC unit eligible for cost segregation? Absolutely, Tim. In fact, that's one of the items that they're looking at. And so the easiest way to look at it is if I have an item that is less than 20-year property, right? So it's 15, 7, and 5-year property. They're breaking it out. And they're telling you how much you could do bonus depreciation, which is 100%. How much could you write off right now? And if you didn't do cost seg, you could actually go back, right? You can go back and recapture if you missed it for previous. It's just that year's laws apply, right?
Correct.
So,
and you can determine where you're going to take the loss. You can do it in 18, the current year. You may want to wait till the 19 return. You think you're going to have more income.
Hey,
but you're going to take the loss in the current year.
So here's what I'm going to do. Some of you guys are asking for the cost seg person. Email in at Tax Tuesday. So, Patty, if you could type up into the whatever it is. Let's see. Can cost segregation be done on existing rentals? Say, yeah, absolutely. The only time I wouldn't do a cost seg, actually, there isn't a single time when I wouldn't possibly do a cost seg. Even if I'm about to sell a property, I may do a cost seg so I don't have to pay recapture on stuff I've completely depreciated. It's like if I can say, hey, my carpet is now worth zero, great. Or if it's considerably less, then I don't have to do the depreciation recapture on it. So I'm going to treat that as long-term capital gains.
Right.
So here's the deal. Because you guys like cost seg, it's free to do an evaluation to a guy I know, Eric. Are you looking at it? Yeah, that's my buddy. So eric@costsegauthority.com. So well, here's what we'll do. Email me. We'll do they'll do it if they get three pieces of information. So we'll gather a little bit of information. That way you don't have to pay a cost. We'll make sure that we're getting you with the people that it doesn't cost. So they'll do it in a free evaluation. And what they're doing is they're seeing how much you could actually save. So you could say, is it worth to spend a little bit of money to save a bunch of money? Yeah. But is it worth spending a little bit of money if it's going to save you a little bit of money? No. But wouldn't you like to know that? So yeah, absolutely. All right, keep going on. So the answer to this, is it okay to keep rental payments in my personal bank account, is run it through the LLC. If you really want to have it in your personal, go through the LLC first is what, if you don't, you know, then you're just giving somebody an argument and the chances of them pushing that argument are very low. Yeah, but it's not hitting you. Somebody just said this, IRS publication, notary public, fees you receive for services you perform as a notary public are reported on Schedule C. These payments are not subject to self-employment tax. There you go. So Josh, so the answer would be, and what Josh is doing, he was the notary who said, I don't think he's going to pay self-employment tax. Good one. You don't pay the self-employment tax, but you do not get to do an accountable plan if you are a sole proprietor and your audit rate's infinitely higher. So it's not going to save you much from a tax standpoint. Actually, so many of you guys are asking about the COSSEG stuff. p.peary@alglaw.com for COSSEG. Send an email to Patty and she will introduce you to Eric. But he's got a bunch of accountants and they're all over the country. So he wants to make sure you get to the right people and we want to make sure they're getting a discount. We don't charge for this, guys, so we're just going to be forwarding you to somebody else, but we want to make sure you're getting we get a really good discount, and they'll do stuff for you for free, including the initial evaluation, where a lot of people charge you an hourly for that.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
All right, here's a good one. I am selling a house to my brother and doing a 1031 exchange with the proceeds. I heard the IRS may disallow this transaction. Is that true? What do you think, Jeff?
Well, that is true under certain conditions. And what they're mainly looking at is basis shifting.
Mm-hmm.
That is, between related parties, you're trying to allow one person to take losses or even gains. And it's kind of hard to describe. There is a prescribed way to do these properly.
I'm so setting you up.
I know.
There is a way to do it properly. No, so what it is because this was a question somebody texted me. And I was like, they were freaking out. They're about to close. And they said, oh, my God, somebody just said that they're going to disallow it. No, it's not disallowed. Your brother can't sell it for 2 years after you do a 1031 to him. So you can 1031 exchange with related parties, but you have to hold on to it. And then the other thing is, like, you can even 1031 exchange that you buy an investment property, you go live in it. People always say, oh, I can't go live in it because I 1031 exchange.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, you can actually live in it. You can go live in it. You just can't do your 121 exclusion if you've 1031 within the last 5 years. I think that's the rule. Pulling that one out of the air, but I'm pretty sure that's right. But this one, I remember looking at the statute because I was like, oh, no, I think there's a way around. So I just happened to be looking at it. Now it's here in front of us. So, yay, we got a cool question.
What I'm really concerned with is that you're doing this as though it was an arm's length transaction.
Hey, look at this one. Somebody says, if one sells a 1031 exchange valued at $100,000 with existing mortgages of $70,000 and acquires replacement property valued at $150,000 with $125,000 in new mortgages, in this example, the taxpayer cashed out $5,000 equity potentially taxable. Does this cash boot be offset by $4,000 sales commission to agent? I believe so. So what your cash boot, so what he's referring to is you had $30,000 of equity. Now you have $25,000 of equity. You ended up with $5,000. You have to look and say, are there expenses that were associated with it? Because that would lower the amount that you actually have in the transaction. So
yeah, there's two things. You don't want to receive cash and you don't want to be relieved of any debt.
Yeah. So
both of those cause boot.
Yeah, well they increase the value of the property and they increase the amount of debt.
So
but
I see how this is. So what's
he took, well, because the difference, the spread between them is he went from $30,000 to a difference of $25,000. So he was able to take $5,000 of equity back out. We got some cash boot. That's what they call it. So technically, you have expenses that offset some of that. So sitting here today, this is something I can do a 1031 exchange of primary home and get it $500,000 plus buy a rental. Oh, Sam. He's going. I like Sam. All right. So the answer, Sam, is I would ask your 1031 exchange facilitator since they have to do all your forms. That's a punt. But I believe you get to take your expenses. So your cash boot under that transaction would be about $1,000, which wouldn't be earth shattering. And chances are no one's going to make you report it. All right. Can I do a 1031 exchange of a primary home and get the $500,000 tax free? So what Sam's referring to is, can you do a 121 exclusion plus a 1031 exchange? The answer is yes. And when you do it, you do get the $500,000 if you're married and you lived in it two of the last 5 years. In fact, just that rule, two of the last 5 years. It's not the last 2 years. It's two of the last 5 years. So you could live in a property for 2 years, make it a rental for 2 years and sell it, and you get both the 121 exclusion, which is that $500,000 for married couples of capital gain exclusion plus, $250,000 if you're single. And that ups the, somebody just said, just for the record, notary fees are exempt. Yep. No, I already got that. So you guys are absolutely right. So I didn't know that off the top of our heads.
I didn't.
But we've been corrected, sir. Now we know. And that's really cool because, you know, we probably have a bunch of notaries rolling around out there. I'm sure that our guys would catch it. Yeah. But so what were we chatting about? Oh, the 121 plus the 1031 exchange. So this is where it's really cool. So I'm going to give you guys a real life situation. Somebody buys a house, $500,000. They sell it 5 years later for $2 million. They're down in San Fran. So this is actually a kind of a fact pattern. So $1.5 million in increased in value. They have a $500,000 capital gain exclusion. So they paid $500,000. They're going to get a $500,000 exclusion. They're going to have $1 million of gain on the sale of their house in California, which is going to be, they're in the top bracket. They're a very successful software engineer. You're talking about not only the top capital gains rate of 20%, but you also have the net investment income tax of 3.8 plus the, I believe it's, you're getting that even on a personal residence. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it's 3.8 plus the California tax of 13%. So they're looking at, a lot of people say, oh, it's 20%. No, it's actually about 36% for this chap, 36.8. So $368,000 in tax on the sale of that home. Here's all you have to do. Instead of selling it right away, you just rent it. And there's no set time frame for renting it. In fact, there's one case where they weren't able to rent it, but they really tried hard. But just to be safe, rent it to somebody, maybe somebody you know, for 6 months. Then sell it as a 1031 exchange. Now, here's the rub. The 121 exclusion only covers capital gains, not dividend recapture. Depreciation recapture. So you have your 1250 recapture. So you might have you're going to have a tiny bit, and that's going to be taxed at your ordinary bracket, capped at 25%. But what's really cool is that entire $1 million now is non-taxable. That entire $1 million of gain, now you can roll it into other properties. And then if you want to live in that property, make sure it's an investment property when you buy it, rent it again for 6 months, and then go move in it. So the answer is, would you go through a headache for $300,000 or $400,000? Yeah, I would.
Absolutely.
But wouldn't you rather know that going in, saying, is there a way around it? And obviously the numbers go up, so it gets kind of fun.
Just keep in mind, you can only rent that property that you're selling for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want the clock to run out on you.
Yep. Somebody says, in a 1031 exchange, when one sells one property and buys multiple, how does the deferred loss and capital gains assigned to the multiple properties? It's actually basis, and it gets assigned amongst the replacement properties. Right. So you wouldn't have loss. This is only for gain. Let's keep going around. So is it true, and how do we get around it? So the answer to the question is, you can 1031 exchange with your brother. You just have to sit on it. Make sure your brother sits on it for 2 years. So if you're selling it to him to live in, then you want to make sure that then you're fine. Somebody says, hey, how do you get the 121 exclusion? How many years do we need to live in a 1030? Before it qualifies for it. Somebody says, how many years do we need to live in a property from a 1031 exchange before it's a home and qualifies for the 121 exclusion? So Betsy, I'm paraphrasing you. It's 5 years. And what it really comes down to is, you cannot use the 121 exclusion on a property that was 1031 within 5 years. So once you're over 5 years, you no longer have to worry about that. Oh, fun stuff. You guys are fun today. Are charitable contributions deductible to a C-Corp? Jeff, you know this.
Yes, they are deductible, but there's an Income limitation, taxable income limitation.
10% of net income, right?
10% of net income. So
I kept thinking that went to 5, but I was like,
I
looking.
I want to say it's 5 too.
But. Tax Cut and Jobs Act is somewhere, but I looked at the publication today and it was 10%.
Okay.
I was like, it's 10%.
So the problem with this is if your corporation's running at a loss or isn't making lots of money, so you have to make at least $10,000 to make a $1,000 contribution.
Mm-hmm. But you know what you can do instead?
What can you do instead?
Do a sponsorship. Don't do advertising because advertising is UBIT to the recipient organization. So if you advertise with your church, that church, it's not exempt anymore. They have to pay 21% on that, I believe. It's UBIT, unrelated business income tax. But if you do a sponsorship and you're not getting anything of value other than, hey, ABC Inc. is a proud sponsor of the, you know, pageant or whatever. I'm trying to be non-committal to any particular religious, but let's say it's, so I said a church, so I guess so Christmas pageant. We're going to do a Christmas pageant. All right. Then sponsor it. And that way you don't have to worry about writing it off as a charitable donation. It's now a sponsorship and it's an expense. And you can write off all the expenses you want.
I agree.
See, fun stuff. Learn something new every day. All right. I like talk about charities. I don't know. We skipped right past that one pretty quick. P. Peary at ALG Law came back as non-deliverable. That's weird. Patty, could you reach out to Shauna and make sure she gets your correct email address? I may shoot something out. You know what I'll probably do is include Eric's information when we send out a email as a follow-up. So we'll get all that. Let's see. I provide gas, food, and lodging for an unrelated person. That sounds like you're just like a nice person. Is any of that deductible on my personal return?
Well, actually, what you've done is you've given this unrelated person a gift.
And the good news is if it's less than $15,000 a year, you don't have to pay tax on that, on you being nice.
Right. So if you're extremely nice, you may have to file a return and later pay taxes upon it.
Yes. This is just bizarre. I provide gas, food, and lodging, and the IRS wants to punish you for it.
But no, it's not deductible. It's not a recognized charity or anything.
You know what you like to do? Like, so in certain circumstances, I run across this a lot with people helping their parents out. It's like they have aging parents. They want to give them money, and they give them a gift, and they can't write it off. Instead, I say, figure a way to have your house, like if you're gonna go to their house, rent the dang house and have a business meeting at the house. If it's less than 14 days, they don't have to pay. You can write it off through your company, and they don't have to recognize that income. So I'm kind of a twit on these things. I look at it and say, you know what? Decide you guys are gonna have a family meeting, invite your parents in to participate, talk. Like I'm a big advocate of having a family corporation where you actually bring everybody in and like you sit down and have an actual meeting. So I would do that. And that way you can get some money to them. Otherwise, if you're providing gas, food, and lodging to an unrelated person, I immediately start thinking it's a girlfriend or a boyfriend or something. They're sleeping on my couch. Sure. No, but yeah, it's hard to get a tax benefit if you're just being a giving person. Otherwise, you got to make it, you got to have a business reason. What are the advantages? Oh, somebody asked a really good question here. What if that person becomes a dependent on your tax return? Well, that's cool, except your exemptions are gone. So you get a standard deduction. You really get nothing for dependents.
Yeah, and it's no longer a gift. It's now you're providing for their support as a dependent. So again, no deduction.
Yeah, Angela, don't do it. Don't be nice to people.
No, that's not what we're saying.
You know what you can do is you set up your own charity and you help people, and then you don't have to worry about deducting any of it because every time you give money to your charity, you're writing that off, or you give assets to it if you've been listening to us. All right. Should I be making investments as a limited partner in hedge funds and real estate syndications through my Wyoming company? Or is it better to set up a separate entity that the holding company is manager of? So I'm not sure I follow that one completely. So I have a limited partner in hedge funds and real estate syndication. So here's what I'm doing. So again, you have inside and outside liability. It doesn't matter from an inside liability standpoint of how you own your investment in a syndication. What it matters is whether somebody can take that ownership away from you in that syndication. So if somebody were to sue you, Ray, and want to go after your assets, can they take away your syndication? The answer is generally yes. unless you place it into a safe, and a virtual safe is like an LLC in Wyoming. Nobody can take your assets out of it. So I would, if it's me, I'm putting it into an LLC in a state that nobody can touch, just because I never know when something's going to pop up. Plus, I'm orderly. I like having all my stuff in one or two places, and I know where everything is, and I made it really easy so that if I get hit by a Mack truck tomorrow, my estate's actually really easy to identify. They're like, all right, here's where everything goes. Not everybody is like that. Some people like having lots of different interests and lots of different things, and it's all, you know, all over the place, and it becomes kind of a puzzle when they.
There's very, very little inside liability with securities or those type of things. It's like having a lot of money in your wallet. Nobody's going to sue you because you have money in your wallet, but they will sue you to get the money in your wallet.
Yeah, you know what? There's two letters in the English language that makes somebody really sue the heck out of you, and that's MD. So if you know any of those chaps and wonderful women that are medical doctors, you know, and they get into a car accident, don't admit that you're a doctor. In fact, say anything else. Hey, I'm in NorCal and want to Airbnb my home. How do I do this without the LLC in California or paying tax on the full rental Airbnb earnings? Alicia, in fact, I don't even know why I just picked that one out of the air. Darn it. I would like to sell my MD. That's fine. All right. So this is kind of an odd question. I don't know why I just grabbed this because it's not related to the other ones, but what the heck? Airbnb, if it's 7 days or less, is an active trader business. So if you're in California and you're making money as an Airbnb and it's your house, the big issue is it worth it? If you're doing it for your personal house, then if you can keep it to 14 days or less, then you don't pay any tax. Yeah, somebody says house isn't selling, so I'm trying to make some cash. Do it 14 days or less, Alicia. Otherwise, you're going to have self-employment earnings on that and tax. If you're going to go above 14 days, then here's how I would do it. I would have an LLC hold your home, which, gosh, this is really frustrating for me.
I wouldn't do that. I disagree with you.
No, because you're worried about the $800.
A year.
Yep. But again, if you're Airbnbing Northern Cal and you're going over 14 days, you're going to have to do the math on it. Number one, contact your insurance and let them know you're doing short-term rentals so they add a rider on that'll cover the people and cover your house in the event they steal everything. Yes, you're already – and what I would probably do is have it in a trust, and I would make the beneficiary of that trust outside the state, probably an LLC in Wyoming, just to keep that house so that it doesn't follow you around if somebody does a header on your house. And there have been death claims on Airbnbs. So make sure the insurance is good. Make sure that you're putting – it's actually called a land trust that holds the property, have it assigned to an out-of-state, and this is what I would do. It depends on – like I don't want to go down this rabbit trail. I'm already biting my tongue. If you're going to make, let's say, $30,000 or more, then I'm going to probably be doing that through I'm going to rent the house to a C Corp or an S Corp and have it be the host. That's only if my rentals are 7 days or less. And the reason you do that is because you want to be able to get your, somebody already said, $20,000 to $28,000 monthly earnings. So she's got a badass house. I want to run the numbers, Alicia. This is a prime example of when you take your home, you break it into an LLC, and you rent it to your corporation, and your corporation then turns around as the host. And the reason you do that is you want your home, the rents, fair market values, to still be subject to depreciation. You still want to be able to get all the benefits of passive income. And then your host is the one who's getting the short term and it's being sheltered from you, so it's not subject to the self-employment tax. If you do that, there's a good chance you'll get back, you'll get the most money back in your pocket. But we'd have to do a little calculation to make sure the complexity is worth it. All right, going to the next one. Oh, what are the advantages of switching from an S Corp to a multi-member LLC partnership? And Alicia, just email in. We'll get somebody to walk you through it. And our guys are good. They'll be able to break it down for you. What are the advantages of switching from an S-Corp to a multi-member LLC partnership? Well, an S-Corp could be an LLC, so it could be an LLC tax as an S-Corp. If I'm going to become a partnership, the biggest advantage is you don't have to take a salary. But the disadvantage is then it's all earnings are subject to self-employment tax if it's active income.
Right.
So if this is real estate, I would never have you in an S-Corp. Like I rarely have you in an S-Corp. I should say not never, just you never say never. But more than likely, if it's real estate, like especially commercial property, we're going to have a multi-member LLC tax as a partnership. If it's a business where it's generating profits, then I'm probably going to have you as an S-corp. And you could still be an LLC taxed as either.
But would you switch from an S-corp to a partnership? I mean, the only thing I can think of is if you're looking to have more than 100 investors or something like that.
Yeah.
Or you have to switch to a partnership.
Yeah, you could always layer it. But yeah, you're going to have a partnership under under either of those circumstances. So stand corrected. You're right. If you're going to have more than 100, you're doing especially if you're doing
or a foreign part or foreign member, stuff like that.
Foreign, yeah. Unless they're a resident alien, they cannot be an owner in an S-corp. You'd violate the status. Plus, if you have a bunch of people that are investors and you don't know, like you don't put the kibosh on them being able to transfer the ownership, you could unintentionally undo your S status pretty easy. All right. So I gotta crank because we're way over again. Is a Florida single member LLC have any personal protection from creditors? Some, but you're the jurisdiction that had the Olmstead where they pierced this single owner LLC. So when you're running a risk, I'm still, well, usually what I do is, I'll just tell you how I do it. If I have an LLC in the state of Florida, that's good inside liability, and I'm going to have it held by my Wyoming LLC, which is great outside liability. And I'm just going to do it that way. And if I don't want your name to show up in the public records in Florida, I can actually do that. I can have the Wyoming entity be the member manager of the Florida and keep your name out of it completely, which has the funny way of keeping lawsuits away if nobody can tell what you own. Somebody says, if I join Anderson, can I get you to do my taxes? Yes. So we can always get you handled there. Yeah, we love doing taxes. How many returns a year are we doing now?
6,000.
6,000. So we're due 2 or 3. Yeah, we get a little busy, you know. Like,
I think we only have time for 2 more returns this year.
Yeah, okay. The good, the bad, and the ugly of Anderson is really smart people. There's about 250 of us here. Great, but the bad is that we're really, really busy, and the ugly is that when you have 500 people decide they want your return to get done, and you have 30 preparers, you just get killed. And then everybody's mad at you and they write you hate mail saying, why didn't you do my return? I gave you my stuff. So like, that's just the nature of the beast. It's either drive your prices up, which we don't want to do. We try to keep our business model and we believe in doing stuff like this and giving back. So we're altruistic, but it's not without its downsides. The downside is you have a lot of people trying to come in, but absolutely we'll talk to you. And absolutely, we love working with entrepreneurs. Tax software do you use, Jeff?
CCH Access.
Yeah, which is like the Pro Systems FX top of class. Let's see. My partner, did I answer that, by the way?
Yes, you did.
All right. My partner and I own a lodging business that has broken even over the last few years. There are 7 cabins, none of which have ever depreciated. Ouch. Next year, the mortgage will be paid off. So they had to have owned this for a while, and our K-1s will begin to show income. Will we still be able to take depreciation? So the rule is, you want to hit this because I don't like giving bad news.
What's your bad news?
Bad news is, if you miss the depreciation in the past, I don't think you can take it.
Well, actually, you can.
I think you have to go, you can amend returns.
Well, you can actually do a change of accounting method like we do for the cost segs. And go back and recapture all of that depreciation recognized in the current year.
You can do a 3115.
You can do a 3115.
And allow you to catch it?
Yep.
Catch it? Because I remember reading, like, you're toast. So you're sure of that?
Yes.
Thank God you're here, because I would have told him that he's hosed.
and if you haven't had the property for a long time.
Talk to Jeff. I'm just going to give you bad news. Jeff's like Santa Claus.
See, I'm usually the bad news guy.
No, I was thinking that. But yes, but so see, here's what it is. So depreciation, it's you have to take it. I mean, you don't have to take it. It's may take, but you have to recapture.
They're going
to
act like you did take it, whether you took it or not.
I remember reading that you couldn't go back in, that you'd have to go back and amend. Return.
Yeah, you can actually do that change of accounting method where you're saying, oh, I did this wrong. I want to change to this.
And you recapture it. All the previous. All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
And you can even do that in the year you're selling a property, which is just crazy talk.
Yeah. So the answer is, will we still be able to take depreciation? I know the answer is, yeah, you can still take depreciation. It's going back and capturing. And Jeff and I have a split decision. I'm gonna say Jeff is probably right on this, just because I haven't looked at it.
Bet your dollar.
You don't want to bet me a dollar, because then I'll be right. I'm always taking dollars from you, and I don't want to do that today. But I'll for a penny.
And I just want to add in, the mortgage being paid off really doesn't have anything to do, but I see what you're saying is that now you're going to have more income since you're not making those mortgage payments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long you've had this, but like Toby says, it sounds like you've probably had it for quite a while. If you haven't had it for real long, this is a perfect case of where a cost seg would work really well in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the kind of property, it sounds like a lot of it's going to be land improvements and such, but you're not going to have a whole lot of 27 and a half year property in this.
Yeah. So the idea, again, is that if you have property that's depreciated in 15 years or less, especially if you've owned it for 15 years, well, you're not selling that. In other words, your gain, well, they're not really selling here. So,
right.
But your gain gets spread out as though everything that's in it appreciated, which is just not the case. You have stuff that's not worth anything anymore.
Correct.
So you should not be paying gain on that. It says no amendments on depreciation may take in the year you realize the depreciation was not deducted in the past. Oh, see, I love having an account. So he says you're right. Again, what is a cost segregation bill? A cost segregation is when you take a piece of property that would ordinarily under the modified cost recovery system, MACRS, and normally it would, like, let's say you have a building, it's 39 year property. The IRS would say, oh, it's all 1250 property. It's all the structure. You're going to write it off over 39 years. But a lot of that stuff is not 39-year property. A lot of it is 5-year property, 7-year property, and 15-year property. So, for example, my electric system, what would that be, 15?
No, the electrical system is usually whatever the building is. It's considered a structural component.
What if it's not a what if it's part of the it goes to a circuit breaker, it has its own box, it's all the wiring and all that stuff. I know they can
maybe
break that out.
Certain machinery or stuff, yeah. If it's for specific use, then that is not 39-year property.
Then that would be what, 15?
That would be 15-year property.
All right, then you can write it all
off
in 1 year.
Actually, I think it's even shorter than that.
7-year property?
Whatever it's hooked up to is.
All right, so 5-7. So what you're doing is you're taking all those shorter periods of time and you're writing them all off. And the good news is that if it's less than 20 years, you can write it all off this year, whether it was put into service this year or past. It could be used. It could be new.
Well, the thing with the cost seg, though, is whenever it was placed in service, that's the rules you have to use.
Yep.
So like the 100% bonus didn't exist before 2018.
Yep. All right. So now we have to look at this. Somebody said, I like having accountants out there that help. Thank you. So, Robert, I owe you one. God, I got to get through this because I actually...
More to go.
All right. So... Still be able to take depreciation, yes. I have an HSA with my W-2 job where I contribute the max annually. My wife and I have a separate C-Corp. Can I create another HSA through our C-Corp and contribute to two?
No, next slide. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can. You just have one limit.
Well, he's saying they're already contributing the max annually, so...
The question is whether you contributed the max as a single or whether you contributed the max as a family.
Right. Those maxes are determined no matter how many HSAs you have.
Yeah. And here's the deal is if you have a separate C-Corp, why are you doing an HSA? Why not just do a medical reimbursement? Because you can write off 100% of all your stuff. You don't have to put it in a separate account. You're not getting a write-off for the HSA.
Well, it is a write-off.
Well, I guess, yeah, you're getting
it. That's reducing your taxable
income. It's sitting in there, and then it's just growing, and as long as it's used for medical. I would just use the C-Corp. I would just write it off if you have any income through the C-Corp, unless you have employees of that.
No, what you said, though, is a good example, though, that you have an HSA, you max it out.
Mm-hmm.
Expenses over the top of that HSA that aren't reimbursed go through the C-Corp.
See, you're just typing up the medical reimbursement. We got good accountants out there. All right. Which is rare, Robert. I usually don't like accountants.
Oh, come on.
All right. Can I qualify as a real estate professional, even though I have an unrelated W-2 job, if I can prove I work 750 hours in my real estate business? What do you say, Jeff?
I'm going to say it's difficult because doesn't that need to be your primary use of your time?
Yes. Yes. So here's the rule. 750 hours plus... 50% or more of all your personal service time. So if you're working a W-2 job, you better be a part-time employee. Because if you work 750 hours in your W-2 job, then you have to exceed 750 hours. Now, that's step number one. Step number two is you have to materially participate in your real estate activities. Usually we make an aggregation election and treat all of your real estate activities as one activity. But if you have a spouse that can meet the 750 hours test, then your joint return would be a real estate professional. So let's say that I work too much as a lawyer and I have a spouse who does real estate and she does 751 hours every year as a real estate agent. And she doesn't even help on our real estate. Let's just say that she's a real estate agent. She does buying and selling or a broker. It doesn't matter as long as you're involved in those fields or construction or any of those. And she meets that requirement, and it could be your spouse. He meets that requirement. I don't want to be sexist, but let's just say it's my spouse is a she. But let's just say that, boom, we meet that test. Now, the second test is both spouses together. Now, do we materially participate? There's three levels of test, 500 hours, 100 hours, or all we self-manage. In our case, we'd be doing the 100 hours, and between the two of us, do we exceed 100 hours? If the answer is yes, then we are a real estate professional. You just pass, go, and voila. But if you are a W-2 worker doing full-time W-2 job, and it's just you, it's going to be a really tough time because there's no physical way you're going to exceed 2,000 hours.
Yeah, you're going to have to come up with at least 2,100 hours to make it work.
Yep, and the courts have looked at that. The courts don't believe it. Somebody that says, I'm doing 2,000 hours, they're going to say there's not enough hours. You're not working, 16 hours a day. They're just going to scoff at you.
Usually as soon as they find out you're a full-time employee, they're done.
Yep. So let's not do that. We have our personal residence paid off this year and have only owned it for 4 years. Should we do a cost seg on our personal residence? You can't. Cost seg is only on investment property. You have to be able to depreciate it. You can't depreciate your personal residence. All right. I think we're getting towards the end. So there's our 2 for Tuesday offer. I'm not going to belabor you guys. You can email on in if you'd like to take advantage of that. Maybe Patty has a link. I don't know. Patty, do you have a link? Maybe she does. It looks like she sent it. Yeah, twofer. AndersonAdvisors.com/twofer. How do I track hours of work? Any reasonable means. So when you're tracking your 750 hours, it's any reasonable means. It could be your phone. It could be writing it up. All right. Then questions, TaxTuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com or Anderson Advisors. Actually, somebody was really mean. They wrote and they said, this is what happens when you have too many lawyers, is you have these types of things. I'm like, are you kidding me?
What a terrible thing to say, no matter how correct it is.
Yeah. Do you have to opt for a change of accounting method to do cost segregation? Yeah, Mina, you're actually making a 3115 stock. But you can classify different entities. And also, you don't have to take bonus depreciation on all of it. You could choose to take only bonus depreciation on certain portions of it.
Right.
On different.
So it's either you take bonus on like all your 5-year property or not your 5-year property.
Or you just take 5 years. Like once you know, you don't have now you're not doing 27 and a half year or 39 year. You're doing 5, 7, 15, and you're just going to run the numbers. This is the beautiful part. The three rules of tax are always calculate, calculate, calculate. And this is where you get to do those calculations. It's just so much fun to sit there and look at your numbers and say, what do I want to pay? I choose zero or I choose a little bit. I'm okay. But you get to decide. All right, guys, it went way over. First time that's ever happened.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. So
you hear
that? Yeah, I hear. She's out there cackling. All right, guys, until next time, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Great having you on. Yeah, you need to call this a night. No, this is it's an hour tax Tuesday. All right, until the next hour long tax Tuesday, we will see you.
See you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.